Hello, this is Rachel Durkin Durga, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the 3rd of December issue of the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Arson case tossed after Crown outs confidential informant. Toronto judge calls prosecution amongst the worst I have ever encountered. By Jacques Gallant. For the second time in 2 months, the Crown's inadvertent disclosure of information about a confidential informant has contributed to the collapse of a Toronto criminal case. The prosecution's error came to light in the case of a man accused of arson, which was tossed due to delay in a ruling excoriating the Toronto Crown Attorney's Office. Quote, "The unnecessary delay that accumulated in this case was entirely due to the Crown's failure to effectively manage the prosecution and to provide the disclosure materials in a timely manner," end quote, wrote Ontario Court Justice Brock Jones. Quote, "The pace of disclosure in this case and the Crown's handling of its own file is amongst the worst I have ever encountered," end quote. The Crown had accidentally shared information that could identify a confidential source in materials disclosed to the defense, which it then had to claw back after realizing its error, resulting in additional delay to a case already plagued by issues. Quote, "Inadvertently revealing confidential source information is one of the most serious errors Crown Counsel can make," end quote, Jones wrote. Quote, "However it happened, it was a serious failure on the part of the Crown's office and added to the mounting disclosure problems in the prosecution," end quote. Jones cited a Toronto case in the Superior Court of Justice first reported by the Star last month, in which a judge tossed an individual's unspecified, quote, "very serious charges," end quote, after the Crown inadvertently revealed that their relative was a confidential informant, putting both in, quote, "grave danger," end quote, of being killed. The two were told to immediately go into witness protection. There was no indication that the accused before Jones was a confidential informant. The Star isn't naming him, as he is no longer facing criminal charges, but rather the police appeared to rely on the information of a confidential source as part of their investigation. The accused man was facing an arson charge in relation to a fire set at a downtown bar. One of his lawyers, Allison Craig, said he had been in custody since his June 2024 arrest because he didn't have family or friends who could act as sureties, individuals who promised to the court that they'll ensure the accused abides by their bail conditions. Quote, "He has maintained his innocence since day one, and it was quite frankly heartbreaking to visit him repeatedly and tell him that there had been no movement on his case because the disclosure was so delayed," end quote, said Craig, whose co-counsel, Sigma Khan, argued the delay application before Jones. Craig said the inadvertent disclosure of information about confidential informants by the Crown is becoming a growing issue, mentioning that in a few of her cases, she's received an email from the prosecutor hours or days after receiving disclosure, asking her to destroy it. Quote, "I do not know what is causing this to be a more common problem, other than perhaps overworked Crown offices," end quote, she said. The Supreme Court of Canada has said that cases in provincial court must be completed within 18 months, or they must be tossed for violating an accused person's constitutional right to a trial within a reasonable time, unless the Crown can show there were exceptional circumstances for the delay, with delays on the side of the defense deducted from the calculation. The top court also left the door open to tossing cases below the 18-month ceiling in certain circumstances. The accused conceded that about 3 months of delay in his case was defense-related. His trial was anticipated to conclude in March 2026, which would put it over the ceiling, but the Crown said it believed the trial could be completed below the ceiling by the end of January. Regardless of whether the case was over or under the ceiling, Jones said it had to be tossed. Despite, quote, "multiple requests," end quote, by Craig, the Crown was slow in disclosing materials to the defense, the judge said. He also criticized the assigned prosecutor at the time for the, quote, "unprofessional error," end quote, of failing to show up at two judicial pre-trial hearings, which is where the Crown and defense work out trial issues with the judge and discuss missing disclosure items. Initial disclosure wasn't received until 6 months after the man's arrest, and, quote, significant items, end quote, remained outstanding for a year, even though they would have been in the police's possession since the arrest, Jones wrote. The Crown then dropped, quote, several gigabytes, end quote, of material on the defense this past July. Quote, when the Crown fails to act with a degree of professionalism and due diligence that must be demanded of any criminal prosecution, it is responsible for the adverse outcomes that will inevitably follow, end quote, the judge wrote. All of the material should have been disclosed within 2 to 3 months of the arrest, Jones said, but no explanation was provided for the delay. Quote, I conclude that as the disclosure problems associated with the prosecution grew, careless mistakes were being made, end quote, Jones wrote. Quote, the Crown and the Crown alone bears responsibility for this prosecution falling apart, end quote. Toronto police want a budget hike to pay for raises and more officers. Here's how much it would cost. By Alicia Hashem. Toronto police are requesting a $93.8 million increase to their operating budget, a 7% bump from last year that would cover a negotiated pay rise and the planned hiring of 143 new officers. If approved, the 2026 police operating budget would be $1.43 billion, of which about $1 billion is salary. Earlier this year, the Toronto Police Board and the Police Union ratified a 5-year collective agreement that included a near 18% raise. The 2026 budget increase request includes $50.7 million to cover the coming year's agreed-upon salary increase of 3.5%. It also includes $20 million to hire 143 new officers in 2026, part of a 5-year hiring plan to increase the, quote, cop-to-pop, end quote, ratio in a city with a growing population. The plan was approved by the Toronto Police Board in 2024 and supported by Mayor Olivia Chow. Another 221 officers will be added in the next 3 years, or enough to maintain the ratio of one officer to 100,000 residents. The staffing increases are part of the Toronto Police Plan announced last month to expand the Neighborhood Community Officer Program to 4 new areas with 16 officers and increase police presence on 2 sections of the Line 1 subway. Chow's budget chief, Shelley Carroll, who also chairs the Toronto Police Board, said the proposed increase is what she expected to see and in line with the direction given to all city divisions as she promises, quote, a leaner, end quote, budget and a lower property tax hike than in the last 2 years. Quote, their target for the budget was to go no further than the 7%, end quote, she said. Quote, they did find some offsets, end quote. Chow declined to weigh in on the proposed police budget increase in her last budget before a municipal election in the fall. Before her first budget in 2024, Chow became locked in a nasty public standoff with the police service when she initially refused to grant their budget increase request of $20 million. She eventually conceded and the next year agreed to add $43 million to the police budget to kickstart the plan to hire around 500 new police officers in 5 years. Quote, I'll let the police service board deal with it first because I think it's important that they take a look at it, end quote, said Chow of the 2026 request at an unrelated press conference on Tuesday morning. Quote, and then to the budget committee and we'll talk about it then. That's the process. I don't want to preempt it, end quote. In a statement, Toronto Police Association President Clayton Campbell said his members fully support the, quote, responsible budget increase, end quote. Quote, it is our hope that City Council will approve this budget as a positive step towards providing the consistent and sustainable funding needed to maintain the recruitment and retention of the staff and resources required to give our communities the police services they deserve, end quote, he said. In 2023, a Toronto first-class police constable made a base salary of $109,000, less than comparable cities. That jumped to $114,805 in 2024 after a 5% pay bump awarded in a binding arbitration ruling during a contract standoff between the union and police board. The 17.66% pay hike in the 5-year collective agreement that was finally ratified in the spring made Toronto police officers the highest paid in Ontario, according to a copy of the collective agreement obtained by the Star earlier this year. This year, a first-class Toronto police constable makes $119,937, about $40 more annually than a comparable officer in the OPP and close to other jurisdictions like Ottawa, Peel, and Halton. By the end of next year, that constable in Toronto will make $123,679. By the end of 2029, it will be $135,074. The proposed police budget sets aside $56.3 million for policing costs over the 6 FIFA World Cup games that Toronto will host. Most of that amount, or $43.9 million, covers salaries. The policing costs will be offset by city revenue, according to the proposed budget. The budget request notes that according to statistics kept by Toronto Police, homicides, shootings, hate crimes, robberies, and auto thefts have all decreased compared to last year as of October 31st. There has also been an 11% decrease in traffic fatalities. The report attributes this in part to policing efforts. There were fewer priority calls requiring a police response this year, a 12% decrease from 2024. And priority response times improved, the report notes. The highest priority police response time was an average of 13.5 minutes this year, a 23% decrease from 2024. In August, police launched a non-emergency line shortcut on cell phones, Star 877, to help stop people from calling 911 for non-urgent reasons. The city is also hiring more 911 operators. Carroll said the statistics are, quote, wonderful, end quote, but, quote, we don't want to take our hand off the steering wheel at this point, end quote. She pointed to issues like a rise in youth violence as one reason more police officers doing proactive neighborhood policing work is essential. The budget request keeps the same amount allocated for, quote, premium pay, end quote, which covers overtime and callbacks at $69.8 million as in 2025, but warns that the actual amount will likely exceed the budget, particularly due to policing protests. The police are projected to spend $6 million more than budgeted in 2025 for Project Resolute, which includes efforts to reduce hate crimes and keeping police presences at local demonstrations related to the war in Gaza. The Toronto Police Service Board will have a budget meeting on December 8th. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Justice Department expands legal action against states that have refused its demands for voter data by Michael Casey. The Justice Department on Tuesday sued 6 more states in its ongoing campaign to obtain detailed voter data and other election information. The department announced it was suing Delaware, Maryland, New Mexico, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington over their, quote, failure, end quote, to produce statewide voter registration lists. It has portrayed the litigation as part of an effort to ensure the security of elections. But Democratic officials have raised concerns over how the data will be used and whether the department will follow privacy laws in protecting it. Tuesday's actions bring to at least 14 the number of states the Justice Department has sued in its quest for the voter information. Quote, our federal elections laws ensure every American citizen may vote freely and fairly, end quote, said Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dhillon of the department's Civil Rights Division. quote, states that continue to defy federal voting laws interfere with our mission of ensuring that Americans have accurate voter lists as they go to the polls, that every vote counts equally, and that all voters have confidence in election results, end quote. The department has requested the voter data from at least 26 states, according to an Associated Press tally. It's prompted concerns among some election officials because states have the constitutional authority to run elections, and federal law protects the sharing of individual data with the government. It also signals the transformation of the Justice Department's involvement in elections under President Donald Trump. Many requests included basic questions about the procedures states use to comply with federal voting laws, such as how they identify and remove duplicate voter registrations or deceased or otherwise ineligible voters. Certain questions were more state-specific and referenced data points or perceived inconsistencies from a recent survey from the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. Some states have sent the department redacted versions of their voter lists, which in many cases are also available to the public. But the Justice Department has also requested copies that contain personally identifiable information, including voters' names, birth dates, addresses, and driver's license numbers or partial Social Security numbers. The New Mexico Secretary of State's office said it already provided the Justice Department with voter data that is publicly available, but said it's legally prevented from turning over, quote, personal private voter information, end quote, office spokesperson Alex Curtis said in a statement. Rhode Island Attorney General, Attorney Pete Nerona, said his office was aware of the lawsuit and called it the, quote, latest example of the weaponization of the Department of Justice to further the Trump administration's unlawful whims. We stand with and will defend the secretary and win because lawsuits concerning lawful conduct are largely unsuccessful, Nerona said. But I'm not surprised that this administration is confused about what it means to behave lawfully, end quote. The Justice Department's actions come alongside Trump's push to investigate the 2020 election, which he lost to Democrat Joe Biden, and influence the 2026 midterms. At the same time, voting rights groups have sued the administration, arguing that recent updates to a federal tool for verifying citizenship could result in voters being unlawfully purged from voter lists. Last month, 10 Democratic secretaries of state asked the Trump administration to provide more information about its wide-ranging efforts to seek the statewide voter registration lists. They cited concerns that federal agencies have apparently misled them and might be entering the data in a program used to verify U.S. citizenship. Trump administration halts immigration applications for migrants from 19 travel ban nations, by Rebecca Santana. The Trump administration is pausing all immigration applications, such as requests for green cards, for people from 19 countries banned from travel earlier this year, as part of sweeping immigration changes in the wake of the shooting of two National Guard troops. The changes were outlined in a policy memo posted Tuesday on the website of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, the agency tasked with processing and approving all requests for immigration benefits. The pause puts on hold a wide range of immigration-related decisions, such as green card applications or naturalizations for immigrants from those 19 countries that the Trump administration has described as high risk. It's up to the agency's director, Joseph Edlow, on when to lift the pause, the memo said. The administration in June banned travel to the U.S. by citizens of 12 countries and restricted access for those from seven others, citing national security concerns. The ban applied to citizens of Afghanistan, Myanmar, Chad, the Republic of Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Eritrea, Haiti, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen, while the restricted access applied to people from Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Sierra Leone, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela. At the time, no action was taken against immigrants from those countries who were already in the U.S. before the travel ban went into effect. But now, the news from USCIS means those people already in the U.S., regardless of when they arrived, will come under extra scrutiny. The agency said it would conduct a comprehensive review of all, quote, approved benefit requests, end quote, for immigrants who entered the country during the Biden administration. The agency cited the shooting of two National Guard troops by a suspect who was an Afghan national as a reason for the pause and heightened scrutiny for people from those countries. One National Guard soldier was killed and another wounded in the Thanksgiving week shooting near the White House. Quote, in light of identified concerns and the threat to the American people, USCIS has determined that a comprehensive re-review, potential interview, and re-interview of all aliens from high-risk countries of concern who entered the U.S. on or after January 20, 2021 is necessary, end quote, the agency said. The agency said in the Tuesday memo that within 90 days it would create a prioritized list of immigrants for review and, if necessary, referral to immigration enforcement or other law enforcement agencies. Since the shooting, the administration has announced a flurry of decisions it was taking to scrutinize immigrants already in the country and those seeking to come to the U.S. Last week, the director of USCIS said in a social media post that his agency would be re-examining green card applications for people from countries, quote, of concern, end quote. But the policy directive Tuesday goes further and lays out in more detail the scope of who will be affected. USCIS also said last week that it was pausing all asylum decisions, and the State Department said it was halting visas for Afghans who assisted the U.S. war effort. Days before the shooting, USCIS said in a separate memo that the administration would review the case of all refugees who entered the U.S. during the Biden administration. Critics have said that the Trump administration's actions have amounted to collective punishment for immigrants. Pete Hegseth faces deepening scrutiny from Congress over boat strikes by Stephen Groves and Lisa Mascaro. Pete Hegseth barely squeaked through a grueling Senate confirmation process to become Secretary of Defense earlier this year, facing lawmakers wary of the Fox News Channel host and skeptical of his capacity, temperament, and fitness for the job. Just 3 months later, he quickly became embroiled in Signalgate as he and other top U.S. officials used the popular Signal messaging application to discuss pending military strikes in Yemen. And now, in what may be his most career-defining moment yet, Hegseth is confronting questions about the use of military force after a special operations team reportedly attacked survivors of a strike on an alleged drug boat off the coast of Venezuela. Some lawmakers and legal experts say the second strike would have violated the laws of armed conflict. Quote, those are serious charges, and that's the reason we're going to have special oversight, end quote, said Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi, the Republican chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee. The scrutiny surrounding Hegseth's brash leadership style is surfacing what has long been building discontent in Congress over President Donald Trump's choice to helm the U.S. military. And it's posing a potentially existential moment for Hegseth as the congressional committees overseeing the military launch an investigation amid mounting calls from Democratic senators for his resignation. Hegseth vowed a, quote, warrior culture, end quote, but lawmakers take issue. Since working to become defense secretary, Hegseth has vowed to bring a, quote, warrior culture to the U.S. government's most powerful and expensive department, from rebranding it as the Department of War to essentially discarding the rules that govern how soldiers conduct themselves when lives are on the line. Hegseth said on Tuesday, cited the, quote, fog of war, end quote, in defending the follow-up strike, saying that there were explosions and fire and that he did not see survivors in the water when the second strike was ordered and launched. He chided those second-guessing his actions as being part of the problem. Yet the approach to the operation was in line with the direction of the military under Hegseth, a former infantry officer with the Army National Guard, part of the post-September 11th generation, who was deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan and earned Bronze Stars. During a speech in September, he told an unusual gathering of top military brass, whom he had summoned from all corners of the globe to the Quantico Marine Corps base in Virginia, that they should not, quote, fight with stupid rules of engagement, end quote. We untie the hands of our warfighters to intimidate, demoralize, hunt, and kill the enemies of our country, he said. No more politically correct and overbearing rules of engagement, just common sense, maximum lethality, and authority for warfighters, end quote. But now, lawmakers and military and legal experts say the September 2nd attack borders on illegal military action. Quote, somebody made a horrible decision. Somebody needs to be held accountable, end quote, said Senator Tom Tillis, a North Carolina Republican, who in January held out support for Hegseth until only moments before casting a crucial vote for his confirmation. Quote, Secretary talk show host may have been experiencing the, quote, fog of war, end quote, but that doesn't change the fact that this was an extrajudicial killing amounting to murder or a war crime, end quote, said Senator Chris Van Hollen, Democrat of Maryland. Quote, he must resign, end quote. Representative Don Bacon, a Republican who served 30 years active duty in the Air Force, finishing his career at the rank of Brigadier General, said he hasn't been a fan of Hegseth's leadership. Quote, I don't think he was up to the task, end quote, Bacon said. Trump, a Republican, has largely stood by his defense secretary among the most important cabinet-level positions. But the decisions by Wicker alongside House Armed Services Chair Mike Rogers of Alabama and the top Democrats on the committees to open investigations provide a rare moment of Congress asserting itself and its authority to conduct oversight of the Trump administration. Senate Majority Leader John Thune, Republican of South Dakota, who shepherded the Defense Secretary's nomination to confirmation, has said the boat strikes are within Trump's authority as Commander-in-Chief, and he noted that Hegseth serves at the pleasure of the President. Quote, I don't have at this point an evaluation of the Secretary, end quote, Thune said at the start of the week. Quote, others can make those evaluations, end quote. But Hegseth also has strong allies on Capitol Hill, and it remains unclear how much Republicans would actually be willing to push back on the president, especially when they have spent the first year in his administration yielding to his various demands. Vice President J.D. Vance, who cast a rare tie-breaking vote to confirm Hegseth, has vigorously defended him in the attack. And Senator Eric Schmidt, another close ally to Trump, dismissed criticism of Hegseth as, quote, nonsense, end quote, and part of an effort to undermine Trump's focus on Central and South America. Quote, he's not part of the Washington elite, said Schmidt, a Republican of Missouri. He's not a think tanker that people thought Trump was going to pick, and so for that reason and others, they don't like him, end quote. Tension between some Republican lawmakers and the Pentagon has been rising for months. Capitol Hill has been angered by recent moves to restrict how defense officials communicate with lawmakers and the slow pace of information on Trump's campaign to destroy boats carrying drugs off the coast of Venezuela. As he defends his job, Hegseth has spoken to both Wicker and Rogers, the top lawmakers overseeing the military. Rogers said he was, quote, satisfied, end quote, with Hegseth after that conversation, while Wicker said that he told Hegseth that he would like him to testify to Congress. Hegseth at first tried to brush aside the initial report about the strike by posting a photo of the cartoon character Franklin the Turtle firing on a boat from a helicopter, but that only inflamed criticism of him and angered lawmakers who felt he was not taking the allegations seriously. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York called Hegseth a, quote, national embarrassment, end quote, adding the defense secretary's social media post of the cartoon turtle is, quote, something no serious leader would ever think of doing, end quote. Later this week, the chairs of the Armed Services Committees, along with the top Democrats on the committees, will hear private testimony from Navy Vice Admiral Frank Mitch Bradley, who the White House has said ordered the second strike on the survivors. Republicans have been careful to withhold judgment on the strike until they complete their investigation. but Democrats say that these problems with Hegseth were a long time coming. Senator Tim Kaine, a Virginia Democrat, pointed back to Hegseth's tumultuous confirmation hearing, at which issues were raised with his management of nonprofits, as well as allegations of a sexual assault and abuse and drinking on the job. Hegseth had vowed not to consume alcohol if confirmed. Quote, "You don't suddenly change your judgment level or change your character when you get confirmed to be Secretary of Defense," Kaine said. "Instead, the things that have been part of your character just become much more dire and existential," end quote. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. A one-year-old was among 159 killed in Hong Kong apartment fires. 30 others remain missing, by the Associated Press. The death toll of Hong Kong's high-rise apartment blaze rose to 159 on Wednesday, as authorities arrested six people on suspicion of deactivating some fire alarms during maintenance work at the housing complex. The youngest person who died in the fire was a one-year-old infant, police said. The oldest was 97. Police said they have completed a search for bodies inside all seven of eight high-rise residential towers ravaged in the fire that first broke out last Wednesday and took until Friday to be extinguished. About 30 people were still reported missing. Quote, "We have not finished our work yet," end quote, Commissioner of Police Joe Chow told reporters, adding that officials will continue to search through piles of fallen bamboo scaffolding to check if any remains or bodies were buried there. The deadly blaze broke out at Wong Fuk Court in the northern suburb district of Tai Po, which was undergoing a months-long renovation project with buildings covered by bamboo scaffolding and green netting. Police and the city's anti-corruption body said Tuesday that they had arrested 15 people as authorities probed corruption and negligence in relation to the renovation work. Substandard netting covering scaffoldings erected outside the towers and foam boards installed on windows were found to have aided the fire's rapid spread, authorities said earlier this week. Police said Wednesday that six people who allegedly deactivated some fire alarms at the housing complex during the renovation works were arrested on suspicion of making false representation to the fire services department. Residents and officials have said that some fire alarms in the buildings failed to sound when the fire broke out, though it was not clear how widespread that problem was within the complex. The initial cause of the fire was still under investigation. 19 bodies among the 159 were still unidentified, police said. 10 migrants who worked as domestic helpers at the housing complex, including 9 from Indonesia and 1 from the Philippines, as well as 1 firefighter, were among those killed in the fire. Europeans accuse Putin of feigning interest in peace after talks with U.S. envoys, by Lorne Cook and Ilya Novikov. Ukraine and its European allies accused Russian President Vladimir Putin on Wednesday of feigning interest in peace efforts after 5 hours of talks with U.S. envoys at the Kremlin produced no breakthrough. The Russian leader, quote, "should just end the bluster and the bloodshed and be ready to come to the table and to support a just and lasting peace," end quote, said UK Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Andrei Sybiha urged Putin to, quote, "stop wasting the world's time," end quote. The remarks reflect the high tensions and gaping gulf that remain between Russia on one side and Ukraine and its European allies on the other over how to end a war that Moscow started when it invaded its neighbor nearly 4 years ago. A day earlier, Putin accused the Europeans of sabotaging the U.S.-led peace efforts and warned that, if provoked, Russia would be ready for war with Europe. Since Moscow invaded Ukraine in 2022, European governments, along with the U.S., have spent billions of dollars to support Kyiv financially and militarily. Under President Donald Trump, however, the U.S. has tempered its support and instead made a push to end the war. On Wednesday, the Kremlin spokesman said he wouldn't discuss the substance of the talks, but pushed back on any suggestion that Putin had rejected the U.S. peace plan. Where the peace talks go from here depends largely on whether the Trump administration decides to increase the pressure on Russia or on Ukraine to make concessions. A U.S. peace proposal that became public last month was criticized for being tilted heavily toward Moscow because it grounded some of the Kremlin's core demands that Kiev has rejected as non-starters. Many European leaders worry that if Russia gets what it wants in Ukraine, it will have free rein to threaten other countries, which already have faced incursions from Russian drones and fighter jets and an alleged widespread sabotage campaign. Putin met Tuesday in Moscow with Trump's envoy Steve Witkoff and son-in-law Jared Kushner. The Russian and American sides agreed not to disclose the substance of the talks, but at least one major hurdle to a settlement, the fate of four Ukrainian regions Russia partially seized and occupies and claims as it owns, remains. After the talks, Yuri Ushakov, a senior advisor to Putin, told reporters that, quote, so far, a compromise hasn't been found, end quote, on the issue of territory, without which, he said, the Kremlin sees, quote, no resolution to the crisis, end quote. Asked whether peace was closer or further away after these talks, Ushakov said, quote, not further, that's for sure, but there's still a lot of work to be done, both in Washington and in Moscow, he said. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Wednesday that it was, quote, not correct, end quote, to say that Putin had rejected the U.S. peace plan. He declined to comment further on the talks. Quote, we're deliberately not going to add anything, he said. It's understood the quieter these negotiations are conducted, the more productive they will be, end quote. Foreign ministers from European NATO countries meeting in Brussels on Wednesday showed little patience with Moscow. Quote, what we see is that Putin has not changed any course. He's pushing more aggressively on the battlefield, end quote, Estonian Foreign Minister Markus Tishakna said. Quote, it's pretty obvious that he doesn't want to have any kind of peace, end quote. Finnish Foreign Minister Elina Valtonen struck the same note. Quote, so far we haven't seen any concessions from the side of the aggressor, which is Russia, and I think the best confidence-building measure would be to start with a full ceasefire, end quote, she told reporters. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte said Ukraine's partners will keep sending its military aid to ensure pressure is maintained on Moscow. Quote, the peace talks are ongoing, that's good, Rutte said, but at the same time, we have to make sure that whilst they take place, and we are not sure when they will end, that Ukraine is in the strongest possible position to keep the fight going, to fight back against the Russians, end quote, he said. Canada, Germany, Poland, and the Netherlands announced that they will spend hundreds of millions of dollars more together to buy U.S. weapons to donate to Ukraine. This year, European countries in NATO and Canada began buying American weapons for Ukraine under a financial arrangement known as the Prioritized Ukraine Requirements List, or PURL. Russia and Ukraine are engaged in a grim war of attrition on the battlefield and are using drones and missiles for long-range strikes behind the front line. Many analysts have noted that the slow slog favors Russia's larger military, especially if disagreements between Europe and the U.S. or among Europeans hampers the delivery of weapons to Ukraine. Russian drones hit the town of Ternivka in Ukraine's, Dniprovsk region, killing two people and injuring three more, the head of the regional military administration, Vladislav Havianenko, said Wednesday. Two people were in critical condition, he said, after the attack destroyed one house and damaged six more. Overall, Russia fired 111 strike and decoy drones at Ukraine overnight, Ukraine's Air Force said. Meanwhile, Russia's Ministry of Defense said Wednesday that air defenses destroyed 102 Ukrainian drones overnight. Falling drone debris sparked a fire at an oil depot in the Tambov region, about 200 kilometers or 120 miles south of Moscow, local Governor Yevgeny Pershyov said. Renowned astronomers pushed to protect Chile's cherished night sky from an industrial project by Nayara Bachki and Isabel Debre. Chile's Atacama Desert is one of the darkest spots on Earth, a crown jewel for astronomers who flock from around the world to study the origins of the universe in this inhospitable desert along the Pacific coast. A rare confluence of factors makes the Atacama an ideal home for some of the world's biggest ground-based astronomical projects: dry climate, high altitude, and crucially, isolation from the light pollution of civilization. Quote, "It's a perfect cocktail for astronomy," end quote, said Daniela Gonzalez, executive director of the Skies of Chile Foundation, a nonprofit that defends the quality of the country's night skies. But that may not be the case for much longer, a group of leading scientists warned in an open letter to Chile's government released Tuesday. A private company is pressing ahead with plans to construct a giant renewable energy complex in sight of one of the Earth's most productive astronomical facilities, the Paranal Observatory, operated by an international consortium known as the European Southern Observatory, or ESO. In the letter, 30 renowned international astronomers, including Reinhard Genzel, a 2020 Nobel laureate in astrophysics who conducted much of his prize-winning research on black holes with the ESO-operated telescopes in the Atacama Desert, described the project as, quote, "an imminent threat," end quote, to humanity's ability to study the cosmos and unlock more of its unknowns. Quote, "The damage would extend beyond Chile's borders, affecting a worldwide scientific community that relies on observations made at Paranal to study everything from the formation of planets to the early universe," the letter reads. "We are convinced that economic development and scientific progress can and must coexist to the benefit of all people in Chile, but not at the irreversible expense of one of the Earth's unique and irreplaceable windows to the universe," end quote. The scientists join a chorus of voices that have been urging the Chilean government to relocate the hydrogen-based fuel production plant since the plan was unveiled a year ago by AES Andes, an offshoot of the American-based multinational AES Corporation. In response to a request for comment, AES Corp said that its own technical studies showed the project would be, quote, "fully compatible," end quote, with astronomical observations and compliant with Chilean government's strict regulations on light pollution. Quote, "We encourage trust in the country's institutional strength, which for decades has guaranteed certainty and environmental protection for multiple productive sectors," end quote, the company said. The plan, which is still under environmental review, calls for 3,000 hectares, or 7,400 acres, of wind and solar energy farms, a desalination plant, and a new port. That means not only a major increase in light pollution, but also new dust, ground vibrations, and heightened atmospheric turbulence that blurs stars and makes them twinkle. All of that just 3 miles from the Paranal Observatory's high-powered telescopes, will mess the view of key astronomical targets and could obstruct scientific advances, experts say. Quote, "At the best sites in the world for astronomy, stars don't twinkle. They are very stable, and even the smallest artificial turbulence would destroy these characteristics," end quote, said Andreas Kaufer, the director of operations at ESO, which assesses that the AES project would increase light pollution by 35%. Quote, "If the sky is becoming brighter from artificial light around us, we cannot do these observations anymore. They're lost. And since we have the biggest and most sensitive telescopes at the best spot in the world, if they're lost for us, they're lost for everyone," end quote. Although this controversy might be specific to Chile, home to 40% of the world's astronomy infrastructure, the project reflects the wider tension between natural darkness and industrialization, tearing at countless countries as light pollution makes the night sky about 10% brighter each year. Quote, "Major observatories have been chased out to remote locations, and essentially now they're chased out to some of the last remaining dark sky locations on Earth, like the Atacama Desert, the mountain peaks of Hawaii, areas around Tucson, Arizona," said Ruskin Hartley, the executive director of Dark Sky International, a Tucson-based nonprofit founded by astronomers. Quote, "All of them are now at risk from encroaching development and mining. It's happening everywhere," end quote. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Doping at Your Doorstep, The Next Olympic Drug Crisis Could Be Coming Through the Mail, by Eddie Pels. The next Olympic doping scandal could be delivered right to your doorstep. A trove of so-called research chemicals known as peptides, many of them banned by the World Anti-Doping Agency and some not approved for human use in the United States, are available with the simple click of a button through online retailers. One seller is Amazon, another is Alibaba, a sponsor of the International Olympic Committee. The easy availability of the drugs, combined with their hard-to-detect nature, is precisely the toxic combination doping regulators and Olympic officials are trying to avoid. With the Milan-Cortina Games just 2 months away, they are hoping to break a string of scandals involving the Russians and Chinese that have disrupted the Games both summer and winter since 2014. Though online pharmaceuticals and supplements have for years been portrayed as a risk by anti-doping authorities, the influx of certain hard-to-detect peptides, chains of protein-building amino acids marketed to help with anything from anti-aging to workout recovery to weight and memory loss, presents a more difficult challenge. Quote, "These substances have proliferated," end quote, said Oliver Catlin, president of the Anti-Doping Sciences Institute, whose late father Don was among the godfathers of anti-doping research. Most of these peptides are so-called, quote, research chemicals, end quote, that are not approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and are also banned by the WADA code, either under its S2 category that encompasses peptides or under its SO classification, a catch-all category for non-approved substances. The few substances specifically listed under the SO category, such as the popular BPC-157, are placed there because the pharmacological makeup of the substances don't fit neatly into another category on the banned list. One tricky part of the SO category is that it includes unapproved substances that aren't specifically listed because, for instance, there is no way to test for that drug, and regulators don't want to reveal that to users. Catlin's research found hundreds of the banned or illegal peptides available on the online market and an ever-shifting menu of items, with some of them removed after the Associated Press started asking questions. Quote, "It's not like it happened overnight," end quote, he said. Quote, "The mainstream use of peptides has exploded in the last 5 years," end quote. Dan Burke, a former FDA official who now heads intelligence and investigations at the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, said the New Age peptides are hard to corral online because the American law prohibiting their sale dates to 1938, quote, "and it just isn't working, and it doesn't work to this day," end quote. Quote, "The bad guys know it, and that's why the stuff proliferates," end quote, Burke said. Though some peptides, insulin and the newly popular weight loss dynamo GLP-1 are among the best examples, are time-tested, perfectly legal with a prescription, and effective, other substances in the category are not legally marketable, either as supplements or prescription or over-the-counter drugs. A number of them, including BPC-157, could be found on multiple online sites, including Amazon and Alibaba. The latter is a major IOC sponsor, quote, "committing to helping the IOC transform the Olympic Games for the digital era," end quote. Asked by AP about this connection, an IOC spokesperson said Alibaba, quote, "confirmed to us that it consistently monitors its marketplaces and that it does not have prohibited substances for sale from the WADA 2025 list," end quote. Approached by AP, a representative for Alibaba.com asked for links to, quote, "problematic," end quote, drugs sold by its marketplace, and, after the AP sent two of them, said they had removed those items. The company said it bars all prohibited substances in accordance to the WADA banned list. Quote, "although some of these substances may not be legally restricted in ordinary consumer contexts, we have proactively adopted stricter standards to define operational boundaries, and our compliance efforts go beyond passive adherence and minimum legal requirements," end quote, the company said in a statement. Amazon told AP it requires all products offered on its marketplace to comply with applicable laws and regulations and is in the process of removing products that violate its policies. A few days after being contacted by AP, the website removed some of the drugs the AP had asked about, but a number of listings remained, and some new ones popped up. The current peptides boom comes some 25 years after the late Victor Conte became a household name in sports by developing and selling, quote, the clear, end quote, and, quote, the cream, end quote. Those were the names for so-called designer steroids that led to the infamous scandal that emerged from Conte's Bay Area Lab Cooperative, or BALCO, and engulfed baseball and track. Like some peptides, designer steroids were impossible to detect at the time, but they were not easy to obtain. It took years to uncover their existence, let alone to analyze their efficacy or sanction the athletes who used them. Fast forward 25 years, and this new model of performance enhancers are, in some cases, just as difficult to detect, but as easy to purchase as clicking a few buttons on a computer. WADA spokesman James Fitzgerald said the availability of PEDs on websites isn't under its jurisdiction, but that WADA began teaming with national anti-doping and law enforcement agencies 2 years ago to tackle the illegal manufacture, sale, and supply of performance enhancers of all sorts. Quote, "The illegal manufacture and trafficking of PEDs is not just a problem for sport. It is a societal issue that requires a multifaceted approach," end quote, he said. Whether the proliferation of the drugs could be the trigger point of the next Olympic scandal could take years to uncover. Like some of the blood-boosting drugs they purport to mimic, most peptides disappear from the blood quickly, which makes them hard to detect. The IOC stores blood samples for up to 10 years to account for possible improvements in detection long after the event ends. USADA and other anti-doping organizations have spent years warning athletes about the potential legal and eligibility risks of using unapproved substances, whether via prescription drugs or unvetted supplements, while also articulating the health risks for elite athletes and others looking to gain a small advantage in the gym. Quote, "From a consumer buyer beware standpoint, any time you consume or inject something where you don't know what you're taking, there's the possibility of adverse health effects, and that's concerning," end quote, said Matt Federuk, USADA's chief science officer. Crystal Fabergé egg crafted for Russian royalty shatters record and sells for $30.2 million by the Associated Press. A rare crystal and diamond Fabergé egg, crafted for Russia's ruling family before it was toppled by revolution, shattered records Tuesday as it sold at auction for £22.9 million, or $30.2 million. The winter egg, which was compared to the iconic Mona Lisa, was just one of seven of the opulent ovoids remaining in private hands, Christie's London auction house said. The 4-inch or 10-centimeter tall egg is made from finely carved rock crystal, covered in a delicate snowflake motif wrought in platinum and 4,500 tiny diamonds. It opens to reveal a removable tiny basket of bejeweled quartz flowers symbolizing spring. The sale price, which included a buyer's premium, topped the $18.5 million paid at a 2007 Christie's auction for another Fabergé egg created for the Rothschild banking family. Craftsman Peter Carl Fabergé and his company created more than 50 of the eggs for Russia's imperial family between 1885 and 1917, each elaborately unique and containing a hidden surprise. Tsar Alexander III started the tradition by presenting an egg to his wife each Easter. His successor, Nicholas II, extended the gift to his wife and mother. Tsar Nicholas II commissioned the egg for his mother, Dowager Empress Maria Fedorovna, as an Easter present in 1913. It was one of two eggs created by female designer Alma Thiel. Her other egg is owned by Britain's royal family. The Romanov royal family ruled Russia for 300 years before the 1917 revolution ousted it. Nicholas and his family were executed in 1918. bought by a London dealer for £450 when the cash-strapped communist authorities sold off some of Russia's artistic treasures in the 1920s, the egg changed hands several times. It was believed lost for two decades until it was auctioned by Christie's in 1994 for more than 7 million Swiss francs, or $5.6 million at the time. It sold again in 2002 for $9.6 million. Each time the egg has sold, it has set a world record price for a Fabergé item, Christie's said. Margot Aganessian, the head of Christie's Russian art department, called the egg, quote, the Mona Lisa for decorative arts, end quote, a superb example of craft and design. There are 43 surviving Imperial Fabergé eggs, most in museums. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the December 3rd issue of the Toronto Star. Your reader has been Rachel Durkin-Durga. Thank you for listening.